Hello. You're listening to Speaking of Urology, the official podcast for Urology Times. In keeping with our commitment to deliver urologists and allied health professionals expert clinical analysis, practice advice, and policy perspectives, each episode of Speaking of Urology will bring listeners timely and informative insights from leaders in the specialty to keep practitioners up to date while helping them practice more efficiently. I'm your host, Ben Saylor. In this episode, I spoke with Dr. Richard Matulevich. He discusses the recent Journal of Urology paper, Tobacco Screening and Treatment During Outpatient Urologic Office Visits in the United States, for which he served as a study author. Matulevich is a clinical instructor in urology at NYU Grossman School of Medicine. Could you discuss the background for this study?
Yeah, so my clinical and research focus is bladder cancer. And we do know that bladder cancer, the relative risk with smoking, is nearly as high as other pretty prevalent smoking-related diseases that people are aware of, like lung and head and neck cancer. However, what we do know is that this fact is underappreciated by patients and doctors alike. So we do have some prior evidence that smoking is specifically underappreciated by urologists. And you know, what we know from clinical principles is that in order to treat tobacco use, the first step is really screening for it and figuring out who uses tobacco. Because without that, you really can't take that next step in helping people quit. So really the impetus for this study was to, you know, help determine how often screening was actually happening in the urology clinic. And to do this at the population level. So a lot of prior studies may have done this at individual institutions, single center studies, but the data set we used for this study is a nationally representative population-based study. So this gave us a really strong idea of what's happening across the country rather than in practices that may be susceptible to other biases.
What were some of the notable findings, and were any of them surprising to you or your co-authors?
So I think the primary takeaway from our study is that screening is happening. You know, we found that about 70% of visits did include screening in the urology office. And this was probably a little bit higher than I thought it was based on my own anecdotal experience and practice. What I didn't expect, though, is that there was no variation among visit reasons. So one of the things we looked at, in addition to all visits, or tobacco screening at all visits, we looked at visits by diagnosis. So I definitely expected patients coming in with cancer or erectile dysfunction or other things that we know have a very strong link to smoking would actually have screening happening more often at them. However, that was not the case. There was really no significant difference in the amount of screening that was occurring in these types of visits compared with alternatives. I think, you know, the other notable findings as well is that although screening was happening very often in this setting, the next step was not being taken. So very, very few patients actually had any counseling documented or any medications ordered that would help with smoking cessation.
Why do you think that urologists rarely offer counseling or cessation treatment?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question. So I think it's because it's hard. It's very difficult. It's difficult for patients. It's difficult for providers. But I think specifically for urologists that there's some good data that hypothesizes the reasons for the why this isn't happening too often. And that has to do with time. That's both the time from the urologist and also the patient's time. The competing visit reasons. You know, a lot of our patients are older, more comorbid patients that require a really detailed, you know, discussion about the problem they're primarily seeing us for urologically, and also their other medical problems that kind of relate to that. And I think urologists also don't have a lot of comfort with this. You know, our training does not really include tobacco cessation screening or counseling the same way maybe internal medicine doctors or pulmonologists may. But I don't think that's an excuse. I think that, you know, because so many disease processes that we deal with are related to tobacco use and smoking specifically, that I think this is absolutely our domain. The trick is really going to be figuring out how to best do this. Because as I said, we're, you know, we're busy clinicians and patients have a lot of needs when they see us. So really figuring out the best way to integrate this into our clinical practice, I think, is really the next step.
Could you describe your own approach to counseling and cessation treatment with patients?
Yeah, so I like to use the five A's. And the reason I like to use this is because it helps remind me to do all of this stuff. So what the five A's are it's a framework that helps providers systematically approach screening, counseling, and also pharmacologic treatment. And the five A's stands for ask, advise, assess, assist, and arrange. And it really allows me to kind of stay organized and go through what I think are the most important parts of counseling and treatment. And that's beginning with screening. So asking at every single visit because it might change, advising the patient to quit regardless of whether they're ready or not. I think they need to hear it from a doctor that quitting smoking will be beneficial to your health. It'll be beneficial to your urology problem that I'm sitting here helping you with. And then assess sort of where they're at and trying to meet the patient where they're at as far as whether they're ready to quit, what they need to be ready to quit. And then the next two are the assist and arrange is really helping them with either a prescription for pharmacotherapies, a prescription for behavioral counseling, or advising them to, seek out publicly available resources like 1-800-QUIT-NOW or tons of the available information online. And I think it's incredibly important also to arrange for follow-up for these patients that last 5A. And that's really where, you say, okay, well, at our next visit 3 months from now, when we do your next cancer check-in, we're going to talk about your smoking and really, link this to part of the plan you have for treatment. And I'm an oncologist. I try to integrate this into my treatment plan. I tell patients, especially before they're having surgery, that, this is arguably the most beneficial thing you can do for yourself. I try not to cast any blame or really make the conversation punitive. It's definitely a forward-looking conversation that really aims to integrate smoking cessation as part of their treatment plan.
Do you and your co-authors plan to conduct further research on this topic? And if so, what will the focus be?
Yeah, so this is one of the foundational components of my entire research program. This study in particular looks at things at sort of the 10,000-foot view, the population level. And it's really what was important to identify where some of these gaps are. But where I'm really interested in working and where I'm seeking grant funding is to figure out how to do this stuff. And that's going to involve discussing with both patients and providers where this fits into the clinic visit, potentially either integrating it within the clinic visit or helping facilitate outside interventions with really the overall goal of just getting our patients to quit and figuring out what those barriers, facilitators, and determinants of smoking cessation are in our urology patients.
What would you say is the take-home message for the practicing urologist?
I think the biggest thing is that it all starts with screening. I think we, primarily need to begin to integrate screening into each and every clinic visit. Because that's the jump-off point. That's that first 5A, and really, unless if you're not asking someone whether they're smoking or using tobacco, there's no way you're ever going to begin the treatment process. So I think starting with that ask, trying to figure out a way to actually get it into each and every visit, whether it's as a vital sign that's collected by a medical assistant or some of the ancillary staff, or whether it's the first question you ask. When you start to talk about next steps as far as treatment goes.
Is there anything else that you feel our audience should know about the study findings?
Yeah, I think we know very much that smoking cessation improves outcomes, and it's not even in just urology outcomes or cancer outcomes. It's general health outcomes. Quitting smoking is far and away the most impactful thing that we can help patients do in our daily practice, and the data supports that. And I think it's really on us to help our patients quit. I know urologists may not traditionally be thought of as smoking cessation doctors compared to certainly some of our other medical colleagues, but we can help. Smoking is a chronic relapsing disease. So even beyond just helping patients begin to quit, I think supporting those either who couldn't quite kick it the first time around or even those who were successful. Is equally as important as starting the conversation. So I really think our relationship that we have with patients as sort of long-term trusted providers of care can really be leveraged to make some meaningful impacts in how patients quit smoking.
Be sure to subscribe to Speaking of Urology on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps. And you can get the latest in urology news practice management advice, and health policy updates by visiting www.urologytimes.com. Thank you for listening.